So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just read this text, since you don't have it in front of you. Tashyanu charitam rajan rishivish tatvadarshivihi shutam hi varnatam bhuri vayasita pater muhoho. Is he going to repeat? Tasha, of him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Ramchandra and his brothers. Okay. Anucharatam. Transcendental activities. Rajan. O king. Maharaj Parikshit. Rishabhi. By great sages or saintly persons. Tatvadarshivihi, by persons who know the absolute truth. Shrutam, have all been heard. He, indeed. Varnatam, as they have been so nicely described. Muri, many. Twaya, by you. Sita Patahi, pardon, no, Sita Patahe, of Lord Ramchandra, the husband of Mother Sita. Muhu, more than often. It's a translation. O King Parikshit, the transcendental activities of Lord Ramachandra have been described by great saintly persons who have seen the truth. Because you have heard again and again about Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Mother Sita, I shall describe these activities only in brief. Please listen. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Modern Rakshasas, posing as educationally advanced merely because they have doctorates, have tried to prove that Lord Ramchandra is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but an ordinary person. But those who are learned and spiritually advanced will never accept such notions. They will accept the descriptions of Lord Ramchandra and his activities only as presented by tatvadarshis, those who know the absolute truth. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, text 34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advises, Tadviri pranipatena paripashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. So just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Unless one is tatvadarshi, in complete knowledge of the absolute truth, one cannot describe the activities of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although there are many so-called Ramayanas or histories of Lord Ramachandra's activities, some of them are not actually authoritative. Sometimes Lord Ramchandra's activities are described in terms of one's own imagination, speculations, or material sentiments. But the characteristics of Lord Ramchandra should not be handled as something imaginary. While describing the history of Lord Ramchandra, Shukadeva Goswami trying to do two things at one time, that's why it's trying to put myself online here so that other devotees can see the class. Just give me 1 second. Okay, we'll just have to forget about this right now. So Shukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Parikshit, "You have already heard about the activities of Lord Ramchandra. Apparently, therefore, 5,000 years ago, there were many Ramayanas or histories of Lord Ramchandra's activities, and there are many still. Well, we must select only those books written by Tattvadarshis. Yaninas Tattva Darshanaha, Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, text 34. Not the books of so-called scholars who claim knowledge only on the basis of a doctorate. This is a warning by Shukadeva Goswami, Rishibhish Tattva Darshanihi. Although the Ramayana composed by Valmiki is a huge literature, the same activities are summarized here by Shukadeva Goswami in a few verses." So, Om Yana Simranda Sya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So this is very similar to the topic we were discussing last night, that you not only will find many different Ramayanas, in different parts of India there are different Ramayanas, not only in North India, you're most familiar with the Tulsidas Ramayana in North India, but South India they also have some Ramayanas. So I'm not criticizing any particular Ramayana. But in order for Ramayana to connect you with Lord Ram, it has to be written by a self-realized soul. In order for you to get benefit from chanting Lord Ram's name, it has to be given to you, the name has to be given to you by a self-realized soul. There's a statement from the Hari Bhakti Sudaya that Sanatana Goswami would oftentimes quote. Sampradaya vihinaya mantras te nishpala mataha. That if you get a mantra that is not coming in sampradaya, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's a reflection of the original mantra. Reflection means a name in Sanskrit is nama vash. Just like you have described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani, what the nama vash is. I mean, it's not worthless completely, because it can give you liberation, it can free you from karma, and all those other nice things. That's namavas chanting. Because namavas chanting means you're chanting accidentally, you're chanting jokingly, you're chanting to make fun of the Hare Krishna devotees, you're combining two words like Ra and Ma that are put in different words. Or you're calling the name of a hotel out, the Ramada Inn, just like there's in Australia, New Zealand, and other places, there's this hotel chain called the Ramada Inn. So that's called Namabash. And also if you just hear the name from someone who is not Krishna conscious, actually it's worse than Namabash. Because Sarpo Chistiyatapayam, it has poisonous effects. So it's actually the worst type of, it's actually nama aparada, here in the nama, an offensive name. You understand? So if you just hear it accidentally, that's nama vash. But if you hear it from someone who is envious of Krishna, like the scholars, for example, mentioned here, or someone who is utilizing the name for their own material purposes, like someone who chants Ram Nam and then they collect money or whatever reason like that, then it can actually have poisonous effects. Like Prabhupada gave the example, it's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent. The milk is very nice, but if you have some poison mixed in, then it'll have poisonous effect. So therefore, it's necessary to receive Ram Nam and Ram Katha from someone who is in an authorized assist of succession. We were speaking about this last night. In regard to Valmiki, who is the author of the Ramayana, Valmiki received Ram Nam from the Sapta Rishis and also from Narada Muni. There's two stories there in the Valmiki Ramayana. Like I was just hearing yesterday from the Valmiki Ramayana that Valmiki asked Narada Muni, who was there? Who is there who is heroic, free of fault? He was asking for a description of a person who was like of the supreme, superb character. And Narada Muni said, that's Lord Ram, and you should describe him. And also he was connected in disciplic succession, not only with Narada Muni, but with Lord Brahma. There was that story in the beginning of the Ramayana where Valmiki had cursed a hunter, a Nishada, because this hunter had pierced a crane. You know what a crane is? It's a type of bird. Anyway, you may say duck, because you don't know what a crane is. But a crane is different than a duck. Anyway, so the hunter pierced a duck while the duck was mating with a female duck. And so Valmiki got so angry that he cursed the hunter, but he cursed the hunter utilizing poetry. And that was the origin of poetry. The first time poetry was ever used. And he was just amazed. Wow, it's an interesting curse. I was inspired somehow or other to make this curse so it rhymes. And then Lord Brahma appeared, and Lord Brahma said, you should write the Ramayana in this sort of meter and poetry. So he was connected in many different ways, the disciplic succession, to Narada Muni, Lord Brahma, and then the Sapta Rishis, that whole story, that when he was a dacoit previously, the Sapta Rishis, we told the story last night, we can tell it briefly today, the Sapta Rishis asked him, when he stopped them to try to rob them, they asked him, since you have all this bad karma, do you think your family is willing to take that bad karma? That's love. You understand? Sometimes a man should go to his wife and say, I'm working so hard. Are you willing to work so hard too? And she said, no, no. Oh, actually, the ladies do work hard. They cook and they do other things. So anyway, so he went to his wife and asked his wife and children whether they'd be willing to accept some of his karma. And they said, hell no. You get the karma, we get the money. That's love. And sometimes in materialistic family life, the family is compared to legal thieves. Just like if you were walking on the street and a thief comes to you and says, give me your money. Then after you either give him your money or whatever, you'll call the police. But if you go home and your wife says, give me your money, you think this is love. Anyway, so that's legal thief. I'm not saying in every case. Vaishnava family is different. So please don't confuse, get angry with me, those of you who are married. And don't tell your wives. Or the wives don't tell your husbands. So, but this particular lady who is the wife of Valmiki before he became the great sage Valmiki, she said, no, you get the karma. And his son also said the same thing. You get the karma. So he went back to the Sapta Rishis and he said, now I understand that everybody I was working for, they don't really love me. So why should I work? Because Prabhupada said that family life is the impetus for economic development. Did you ever hear that before? Impetus means the stimulation, stimulates economic development. Because if you don't have family life, let's say if you have no relatives and no wife and no... why work? Why go to medical school, right? One goes to medical school, not always. Sometimes people actually want to be good doctors. But generally, one gets more education, becomes a lawyer. Just like Nrisimha, he wants to be a big lawyer. Because of money. But what's the money for? The money is for one's family. But if one doesn't have a family, or you know, at least mother, father, they're not alive anymore, and the wife has just run away, or the wife's not there, or you don't have a wife, then what's the impetus to work? It's just like, huh? Why am I working? Why am I going to work every day? You know, I could just live and pick the papayas from the trees and the bananas from the trees, or come to the Hare Krishna movement and eat rotis every day. Isn't it? Fill my belly. That's the goal. I'm the body, not the soul. Isn't that? That's the mantra. Fill the belly, that's the goal. I'm the body, not the soul. So you think, so why work? I mean, because food is available freely, you know, so family life is the impetus. So this particular devotee, Valmiki, in his previous life, in one version of the mind, it's called Ratnakara, and then there's different names he's given. Anyway, he was a dacoit. So he lost all of his enthusiasm for working. He said, why am I going to work? Of course, his work was dacoitry. And then he said to the Saptarishis, tell me what to do. And he said, you know, initiate me. Initiate me in some mantra. And he wanted a mantra that was more or less in the mode of ignorance. And that mantra was Mara, 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 you know, like death. So they gave him that mantra, and that mantra was transformed by the chanting, Mara, 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 Ram, 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 into Ram, Nam. And you all know that story. And that Ram, Nam was effective. Why was it effective? Because he received the Nam even as something different from the disciplic succession. That's why it was effective. Had he chanted Ram Nam, otherwise it wouldn't have changed his heart. And the proof of that I gave last night, and I wasn't so specific, is that you have all the pandas here in Fiji, right? And they're chanting Ram Nam. But do they get purified? No. You don't see them get purified. They're chanting Ram Nam, and then after they chant Ram Nam, it's Kava Nam or something like that. Isn't it? Ram Nam, Ram Nam, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram. All right, pass the Kava. So the proof that one is actually chanting the Shuddha Nam, or getting the Nam from the proper source, is that one becomes detached from the material world. I mean, let's take the example of the prostitute who tried to attract Haridas Thakur. It was just 3 days she heard the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, right? She just heard. 3 days she was just listening. And her intention was actually to allure Haridas Thakur and cause him to fall down and then destroy his reputation. But still, she was hearing the pure name. And because she was hearing the pure name, after 3 days, guess what? She apologized to Haridas Thakur and took initiation from him. And she renounced the world. She became so renounced. Imagine, position of a prostitute. I mean, that's pretty low, isn't it? And she became so renounced, she shaved her hair. Can't even get the devotees here to shave their hair. But the prostitute shaved her hair. It's like I asked some devotee to shave your hair. So, and Haridas Thakur, that's proof she was actually hearing purely, too. And she shaved her hair, renounced all of her possessions, and even didn't worry about how she was going to eat. And people respected her so much they brought all the food to her, and she was able to survive. And so that's the proof that she was chanting and hearing Shuddha Nam. Because Haridas Thakur was chanting Shuddha Nam. Unless you get the Nam from someone who is chanting and connected to the disciplic succession, then you will not be chanting Shuddha Nam, and you will not become renounced from the material world. And you'll just keep on drinking your stupid kava. Or doing what other nonsense, eating meat. You know, people wait until the Ram Nomi, they have the Ram Nomi celebration right afterwards. You know, for 9 days they don't eat meat, right, sometimes? And then right after the Ram Nomi celebration, I'm glad it's over. It's almost like the Muslims, they have this Ramadan, right? They wait until sunset. Okay, when the sunset, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, Haribo! Because they don't say Haribo. And then they feast all night, right? Maybe not all night, but most of the night. So the point is, the proof that one is actually engaged in bona fide spiritual activity is that one gradually becomes renounced. Nadanam najanam nasundariyam. Kavitam va jagadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti ahoitikitvaya. There's the proof, there's the test. That one loses interest in wealth, except for using Krishna's service, in followers, in, you know, beautiful or attractive people, the opposite sex, you know, Bollywood movie scene, attractive girls, you know, like that. Or the women, they lose interest in seeing attractive men, you know, like Vivek Oberoi or something like that. You know, I actually saw when we met, several times we met Vivek Oberoi, that there were some ladies with us at the same time, and they just became overwhelmed. They just, their mouths were just opened up. And they exhibited the astasattvika bhavas, you know, the eightfold symptoms of ecstasy to see him. So that the proof is that one becomes nirapeksha, in other words, neutral to the things of this material world. Therefore, the conclusion is we should hear Ramnam, we should hear Ramkata from the authorized person. Otherwise, renunciation doesn't occur. You may enjoy the story. That's one thing. But you don't see any spiritual effect occurring in the person's personality, do you? It's interesting. That is actually the test. So this is the point Prabhupada is making here. Tatva darshabhi. So that means seeing the truth. And that only applies when one is coming in the cyclic succession and following strictly in the cyclic succession. Two things. Connected and following very, very strictly the rules and regulations of devotional service. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahoyitakam. That performing devotional service properly gives you knowledge and renunciation. Okay, so we're going to keep on reading the next verse, because this is the Ramayana, or the part of the Bhagavatam that deals with the Ramayana. Guru Varte Chaturajo Vyacharananuvanam Padma Padvyam Priyayaha Pani Sparshaksha Mavyam Mrijita Patarujo Yoharindranu Jabhyam Vairukyachurvanakyaha Priyaviraha Rusha Rupita Bruvishrimba Thrashtabir Bada Situ Kaladava Dana Kushalendro Vatanaha. So the translation is, this is, summarizes a lot of the Ramayana in this particular verse. To keep the promise of his father intact, that means to make sure the promise was kept. Lord Ramchandra immediately gave up the position of king, and accompanied by his wife, Mother Sita, wandered from one forest to another on his lotus feet, which were so delicate, they were unable to bear even the touch of Sita's palms. It's also described by Krishna's feet that even if they were touched, they changed color. They were so delicate. And the gopis were all worried. This is very similar to the gopis being worried about Krishna going out to the pasturing ground without any shoes. And Krishna said, I'm not wearing shoes because the cows don't wear shoes and I don't want to be better than the cows. So the Lord was accompanied also by Hanuman, or another monkey, Sugriv, king of the monkeys, and by his own younger brother, Lord Lakshman, both of whom gave him relief from the fatigue of wandering in the forest, having cut off the nose and ears of Surpanaka. Thus disfiguring her, the Lord was separated from Mother Sita. He therefore became angry, moving his eyebrows, and thus frightened the ocean, who then allowed the Lord to construct a bridge to cross the ocean. Subsequently, the Lord entered the kingdom of Ravana to kill him, just like a fire devouring a forest. May that supreme Lord Ramchandra give us all protection. In other words, this is a prayer to Lord Ramchandra, glorifying his many activities. So there's many points contained here in this particular verse. There's no purport to this verse. I don't know if I can cover all of them, but Lord Ramchandra's dedication to truthfulness, dedication to his father, that he gave up everything just like that on his father's order. And that's also a lesson that we can all learn, that being ready to give up or to accept anything on the order of the spiritual master, like that, and loyalty. And then also Mother Sita's loyalty, wanting to go to the forest. She demanded to go to the forest with Lord Ramchandra in spite of being brought up in a very comfortable situation, where she had all the luxuries of life, and still she said, I cannot live without you. So that is also great loyalty and chastity. And then Lord Ramchandra undertaking the austerities of wandering in the forest. It's described as lotus feet, and actually he wore these types of forest shoes. You see the sages, they would wear these shoes with a little wooden thing right between the two toes. You ever seen the wood shoes the sages wear sometimes? There's a reason for that. There's an Ayurvedic reason for wearing shoes like that, because it pinches certain nerves in the toes. I don't know if you knew this. So that one's lusty desires will diminish. That's why they wear these wood shoes with a knob on it. You've seen that?
Yeah.
In India. What? You have that for the deities. So that is actually the purpose of it. It's an Ayurvedic type of thing. So Lord Ram would walk with these shoes. And here we also find described Hanuman and Sugriva. We don't need to talk about them. And even more interesting is Surpanaka. Surpanaka, the name means one with very long nails, like curved nails, like a tiger or a tigress. And the story of Surpanaka is very interesting, that Surpanaka, being a rakshasa, liked to eat people. So she was flying through the air and she smelled people. And then she looked down and she saw Lord Ramchandra, and she was thinking, it is better if I can enjoy with him rather than eating him. You understand? Because he thought, well, eating you only enjoy once. But you can marry someone and have whatever life they wanted. And then you can enjoy for many, many years. So she went to Lord Ramchandra and assumed a very beautiful form. One devotee asked me yesterday, what was the benediction that Surpanaka got from Lord Brahma? Because you see, the brothers, that's Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Vibhishan, were executing austerities to worship Lord Brahma. And also Surpanaka was there. So what happened, actually so many interesting stories about Surpanaka. So they each got a benediction, of course. The Ravana, he got the benediction that he couldn't be killed by men or by animals. I mean, he couldn't be killed by, demigods or high, powerful living entities, but he left out men and animals because he thought, you know, they can't touch me. It's like we wouldn't ask for benediction of not being killed by an ant because we're not worried about being killed by an ant. So, and then Kumbhakarna, he wanted to ask for Indra's throne. Instead, he got Nidra Asana by the mercy of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. And so that was mitigated because Ravana, he said, how can you let him go to sleep for eternity? So Lord Brahma said he can get up every 6 months. He doesn't have to go to Mangalarti. It's every 6 months. And then Vibhishan asked for being very pious and devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Surpanaka, she asked for the benediction of being able to change her form at will. So you understand, to look beautiful, or whatever way she wanted to look, she could change her appearance at any time. So Lord Brahma gave her that because she was a lady. So ladies generally are very interested in how they look, right? Like you go to the Priti Bhojan and everyone's showing off how they look. So Sarpanaka was interested, you know, why do I have to put on makeup? I can just change my form. So she got that benediction. And previously, Sarpanaka, according to the Ramayana, was married. So you ask, why was she interested in Lord Ram if she was married? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Well, guess what? Ravan killed her husband. That's described in the Valmiki Ramayana. That, you know, Ravan was fighting one day and he wasn't looking, you know, who he was beating up or shooting or whatever, and he killed Sarpanaka's husband. So Sarpanaka was a widow at that time. But she's not like an ordinary widow that's very chaste. She was just a lusty widow. Or as they say, a black widow. Remember a black widow? There's a spider called the black widow spider. Anyway, so she was looking for a man. Even because she didn't have a husband. And it's interesting that Ravana apologized to her. And that's also another reason why Ravana felt so guilty when he saw Sarpanaka disfigured later on. Because he understood he had killed her husband, my poor sister. I killed her husband, and now she looks like hell. Her nose is missing, her ears are missing. And there's other parts of the body that Lakshman cut off. Not only the nose and ear, and I'm not going to describe it, but some private parts of the body. So what happened is that Sarpanaka, she looked at Lord Ram and she said, my dear sir, I'm in love with you. Please marry me. We can roam in this Dandakaranya forest, because they were in the Dandakaranya forest. And we can roam here and enjoy life like crazy. Because originally Lord Ramchandra had gone to the forest of Chitrakoot. You know the story? Chitrakoot was the first forest. But he left that forest because it was too close to Ayodhya. And he was afraid people were going to come out there, like his brother Bart came and tried to convince him to come back. So he said, let me go somewhere where no one will find me. So he went to Dandakaranya forest. So anyway, so she started saying, we can roam in the forest and be so happy. And Lord Ram said, I have a wife and she's here and she might be a little envious, might be problematic. So therefore, here's my brother. His wife's not here. And he's very attractive. And so Sarpanaka, she went to Lakshman. And she said, oh, Lakshman, marry me. And Lakshman said, I'm just a servant. If you were to marry me, we'd just have to serve Ram all the time and Sita. And by that time, she started to figure out she was being teased. And she went back to Ram, and she said, basically that you will soon marry me, you will soon forget that horrible woman, referring to Sita, with a sunken belly. Sunken belly means Sita was very thin, thin waist. Madhyama, it's called in Sanskrit, means one with a thin waist. And Sarpanaka had, anyway, big stomach, big belly. You understand? And so, eventually, Sarpanaka got very upset, and she said, I'm going to kill Sita. And when she went to kill Sita, then Lakshman interfered and cut off different parts of her body. And she went away crying, and eventually she went to Karan Dushan, her two other brothers there in the forest. And she complained to them. And when she complained to them, they said, don't worry, we'll take care of this Ram. And first they sent 14 giants to kill Ram. You know, really big giants. They were as tall as this building, basically. Ram himself was of medium height. That's the description given in the Ramayana. He wasn't extremely tall and he wasn't extremely small. He was actually just the right height. Medium. Like Lord Nityananda, he was very tall. But Ram was medium height. So they called for these 14 giants. These 14 giants came and Ram with one arrow killed them all. And Surpanaka went back and told Karindushan what had happened, and they became so angry they came with 14,000 Rakshasas to kill Lord Ram. So these 14,000 Rakshasas came with Karindushan, and basically Lord Ram killed them all. And including Karindushan, he killed them. And then Surpanaka, actually there was one of Ravana's soldiers, or Karindushan's soldiers, who escaped, and he went back to tell Ravana about it. And he also told Ravana how beautiful Sita was. And Ravana went to Marich, and he said to Marich, "You have to help me." But Marich didn't want to help Ravana at that point, because Marich had had previous experience of how heavy Lord Ramchandra was. And what was his previous experience? His previous experience was, first of all, his mother was killed by Lord Ramchandra. Tataka, you know who Tataka is? Tataka is the first demon that was killed by the Lord. He's a big lady demon. And that was the mother of Marich. And then, later on, Marich and Sabahu, they were actually attempting to defile the sacrifice of Visvamrita Muni. They were throwing stool and everything on the sacrifice, and bones and blood. And what happened is that Lord Ram fired an arrow and killed Sabahu. But then he fired another arrow, and it sent Marich into the ocean like 800 miles away. He went flying through the air into the ocean, and he was dazed. Still, he hadn't learned his lesson. Later on, Marich assumed the form of an eight-legged beast, the Shabara, to try to kill Lord Ram. And Lord Ram fired some arrows, and he was able to escape. So after that point, Marich took sannyas, because he couldn't even bear to hear the name of Ram. Even if he heard R, the letter R, he got traumatized, because he was suffering from post-traumatic stress. You understand? You know, post-traumatic stress is if you have some really, like, dangerous situation, then every time something similar happens, you start to shake. It's like if you get bit by a dog, every time you hear a dog, rock! Like you pull out a stick. That's happened with me. Not really post-traumatic stress. But so anyway, so Marich couldn't even bear to hear the name of the letter R. He took it out of his vocabulary, every word that had the letter R, because it reminded him of Ram. And he looked, every tree he was looking at, he was seeing Ram behind. So the poor guy had psychological problems. So Ravana went to Marich, and Marich said, "No, whoever's given you advice to attack Ram and kidnap Sita, don't do it." So at that point, Ravana went back and said, "Okay, it's good advice." But then Surpanaka came. This is the second time. Surpanaka came and said, "Guess what? I was in the forest and I saw this beautiful girl, and I thought this beautiful girl should be for you." You know, she was lying, because she just saw Ram. She wasn't interested in taking Sita back to Ravan. She was just a selfish, anyway, B.I., she was selfish. So, but she was making believe that she was interested in Ravana's welfare. And Ravana also saw her without her nose and ears. And he said, "You know, who's done this to you?" And she described, "It's Ram. And I was just trying to get a beautiful girl for you." And Ravana had the habit of kidnapping beautiful girls. I mean, that was his daily activity. He would go out in the Pushpaka Viman, and wherever he saw a beautiful girl, didn't matter if she was married or if she was the daughter of a gate sage, it didn't matter. He would kidnap her. And it's described in the Ramayana that practically all those beautiful girls accepted him willingly, because he was so handsome. And they were thinking, "No, I had an ugly husband before." I mean, practically any lady would like to marry someone who was very rich, right? Let's say you're married to someone who's very poor, and, you know, you're just living in some house in Fiji. And then Some very rich man like Bill Gates, you know, comes and says, will you marry? You'll forget your husband, won't you? Not everybody, but you generally. So most ladies were thinking, Lankapati. You know, he's Lankapati. And what, Jagapati. They actually thought that about Robin. He was so handsome, and muscles and everything like that. All, practically many opulences, like wealth, strength, renunciation. And he was also very intelligent, too. Because how many of you are married to someone with 10 heads? Brilliant, isn't it? 10 times the intelligence of everyone else. As I described, the demigods used to sometimes call Ravana to help with the sacrifices because he could pronounce the mantras so well. He was very erudite in the Vedic literatures. Very, very erudite. I mean, he was a member of the Arya Samaj. Because they perform sacrifices, but they don't believe in God, right? Right? Isn't that true? So that he was the original person who was the founder Acharya of the Arya Samaj. True. I mean, not legally, I understand, but, you know, in essence, he was interested in sacrifices. So all these ladies gladly accepted Ravana. And so every day he was going out and kidnapping people. Of course, we mentioned the other day he tried to kidnap this Vedavati, who was Sita Devi, and he got cursed by her to die because of a woman. But that's another story. Subhanaka was sort of inspiring Ravan to kidnap Sita. He kept saying, you got to do it. She kept saying, you got to do it. She's so beautiful. How can you be a heroic person and let your sister be disfigured? So she was using these two arguments, like guilt. Your sister has been disfigured. You have to do something about it. Why are you so weak you can't do anything about it? And then on the other hand, there's this beautiful girl for you. So two ways that she was attempting to convince Ravana. Anyway, I don't know how much more time we have. There's a lot more in the story. And then Ravana went to, I'll just finish up. Then Ravana went to Marich again and he said, now you have to do it. And he said, I don't want to do it. And Ravana said, I'll give you an option. You can either do it or be killed by me. So Prabhupada commented that Marich decided it's better to be killed by Ram than by Ravana. He had some brain. Because if you're killed by Ram, guess what? You get liberated. And if you're killed by Ravana, no benefit at all. So he decided, and then the rest of the pastime was carried out. So tomorrow we'll continue talking about the Ramayana. It's a very interesting discussion. So all glory is to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Lord Ramachandra ki jai, Sita ki jai, Hanuman ki jai.